The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
We are back. Final hour, and we're not done yet. Coach Kirby Smart joining us a few minutes ago and certainly igniting and exciting the crowd here. But we now have Josh Brooks, who we've had a chance to talk to a couple of times. No longer exactly the new kid on the block. I said that after we saw the Backstreet Boys a minute ago. But you've been in the shop for a while, most of the year. And, Josh, how's it going?
It's going great. You know, 9 months in, you know, you really want to get to that year mark to where you can say you've seen a full calendar year. I know I've grayed a lot. You know, I want to see one of those photos like they do a president year one, president year four, maybe year eight, and then really see how many gray hairs have came in. But I've had to shave the beard because the beard had gotten so gray that I really needed to get rid of it.
Yeah, and we the last time you were on, somebody posted on social media a picture of you, and I think it was Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz, yes.
And so, it went viral.
Yeah, so I've made a concerted effort to do everything I could to remove that look. So I had the beard first.
Yeah.
Then he grew a beard. So I got rid of the beard. Lost a little weight, added glasses, so I'm trying to do everything I can to dispel, you know, to get away from that look.
Well, I think it was Lily, your wife. I ran into her earlier, and she was having a great time showing your niece around campus, and I was thinking, something tells me you're not cruising through a Friday afternoon with on homecoming weekend.
No, it's been a busy day, and these are important weekends, especially every time we can get recruits on campus and from all sports. So I met with track recruits this morning, women's basketball recruits this afternoon. Any chance I can get to help in the recruiting process, no matter the sport, it's big for me to show that availability and to show the passion from the AD of how important it is that we want to succeed in every sport.
And, Josh, it's so easy. It's so interesting because there was a time, and I'm talking many, many years ago when I remember being in college and you'd go see the AD, and it was usually the former football coach.
Yeah.
And that was the case here, although I would not classify Vince Dooley in the category of the former football coach. He, as we all know, Coach Dooley is a genius on 100 different levels. But this job is so different now. I'm not trying to say it isn't fun. But it's almost like you're on Wall Street trying to balance a budget, fundraise nonstop, dealing with 1,000 legal, technical issues. I don't mean to make it tedious, but it's not easy.
It's more of a CEO role. But at the same time, I think one of the advantages I bring to this role is I came up through the equipment room as a student manager, came up as a grad assistant coach, director of football operations. So I've seen the athletic department at many different levels before I started working in administration. So I bring a perspective of being on the coaching side, being a student worker, and now being on the administrative side, which it gives me a balance. So when we talk with a coach or meet with a coach and we're discussing needs versus wants, I have a greater understanding of why something's important because I've been in the trenches with coaches. And coaches are going to fight for every advantage they can because whether it's recruiting or whether it's to get their team ready, they're trying to find that edge. So I think you do find more administrators who maybe didn't play or maybe didn't ever coach. But that's why I'm proud of my past experience. I think it gives me an edge in helping understand with my relationship with coaches.
I asked Kirby Smart this question about NIL because we all thought that would be the topic du jour every time we got together with you know, administrators. But from your standpoint, I know compliance is probably the first layer you have to deal with. But how has that gone so far?
I think it's gone pretty well. You know, it's still evolving day to day, the rules and how each school is applying. How they're using it. But I think it's gone, for the most part, how we expected. And I think that what we're seeing now is early on it was heavy football. It's because it was right around the beginning of football season. But now you're starting to see it open up in other sports. We're at a point now where I think every student athlete from each sport has some form of NIL deal. And I think that'll continue to grow. So I won't ever say it's gone exactly how we expected, but for the most part. But, again, this is evolving day to day.
I'm curious about compliance because I know that's a really critical part of an athletic department to be compliant, to deal with, and they're very complex issues. I mean, somebody can walk down the street and be in jeopardy of breaking an NCAA violation, but how difficult is it, or is it difficult to preach compliance, which you have to do, while student athletes are making money in a completely different venue, but it still seems like the line is being blurred.
Yeah, you know, it's always stressful when you think about you have over 540 student athletes, 300 employees. It's a lot of people to manage to making sure everyone's doing the right thing. Thankfully, we have a great, phenomenal compliance team led by Will Lawler, who's got experience with the Southeastern Conference. He's got experience with other schools. His leadership in that department has been phenomenal with us. We've also partnered with groups that have helped us with the education process, and I think we've done a lot of programming, and our kids have asked a lot of good questions. So I've been very proud of how they've bought in and asked the right questions and stayed on the forefront of these issues. So there really hadn't been a lot of surprises or things that we haven't been able to anticipate.
Josh, one thing that fans are always, I'm sure when you're walking around, they say, hey, what about the schedule? What about this? And Georgia obviously plays the creme de la creme. I mean, the start of the season with Clemson. What is or is there a basic approach to Georgia's schedule from this moment on?
Well, thankfully, we have a head coach and Coach Smart who believes in playing tough competition, and he's willing to go schedule those big matchups like beginning of the year with our matchup at Clemson in Charlotte and future games. You look at our schedule for the next 10 to 12 years, we've got a lot of big matchups, and he believes it makes our team better. And I think that as we look to the potential 12-team playoff, I think it's going to serve us well to have that stronger schedule that we could turn back to and say, we weren't afraid. We went up and step up and played great opponents. And I think that's his mindset. And I'm thankful to have a coach that thinks that way. And hopefully it'll lead to other coaches doing the same, because I do think at the end of the day, it's better for college football. It's better for our conference. It's better for the fans to have those key matchups.
And I'm just guessing another question that athletic directors like you get, and I know there's no answer, but I'll ask anyway. What is the SEC going to look like when that day comes, whether it's in 2 years or 4 or 5 years, when Texas and Oklahoma join the league? We're also conditioned to knowing what the East looks like, what the West looks like, what the rivalry games look like, what the crossovers look like, but it probably won't look that way.
No, and there's much work to be done. We've already started meeting and discussing it. A lot of options to discuss and look at, and thankfully, what I've learned in my 9 months in this role, and even before that when Greg let me sit in some AD meetings, is we have a great group of ADs to work with. So it's never going to be perfect. There are going to be some people who may have an issue with this or that, but I think as a whole, the strength of our conference is how well we work together, because we all know the best thing is what's best for the conference going forward. So we don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but there's a lot of options being discussed.
But fans want certain games, and you can't play them all, but I'm just thinking the games that matter the most to Georgia are pretty obvious. The Florida game in 2 weeks is epic. The Auburn game, which you just had, I've covered Auburn football for most of my career, and it's hard to find a more special environment than that. I don't know if you can do all that, though.
Yeah, and that's the challenge. You're trying to balance tradition but as you move forward and expand to 16 teams. And, one of the things that I'm excited about is, through these challenges, there are going to be new opportunities. Being able to have a better rotation, or where we go to places like Austin or Norman or College Station, which we haven't been to yet, and getting a better variability in where we go.
Be glad you didn't go there last Saturday night.
Yeah, that's right. But, that greater variability will lead to what I think will be better visiting teams traveling.
Right.
I think as we have more of a stagnant schedule, you're starting to see a little reluctance from visiting teams coming to certain locations. So if we can get better variability, it could lead to better travel amongst visiting teams.
I mean, to say the least, this is a great time to be running the Georgia Athletic Department. And I'm well aware that there are a lot of issues other than college football, but we all know how important it is. And here we're in the midst of a historic run. How tough is it to get a Georgia ticket these days?
Well, it's extremely tough right now, especially for a game like this. This is what it's all about. This is what we want. And we have phenomenal fan support. Our fans are the most loyal and dedicated in the country. I believe I saw a stat, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that we're the only SEC team that's had 100% capacity
That's amazing.
Every game so far this year. And it's trending well again this week. But it all starts with their loyalty and how they show up week in and week out. And when we say, hey, we got a 12 o'clock game and we need you there an hour early, they show up there. And they're always the best. Our fans are the absolute best. But we have six opportunities at home this year, and you got to cherish each one of those. And I think that's what makes this place so special.
In just day to day, as we wrap up here and talking to Josh Brooks, the athletic director, Kirby Smart is a unique individual. He's focused, but you can't help. I mean, this campus is literally like you know, like the state fair has come here today. Yeah. There's so many sets like this one around. How do you try to take advantage of that? And there's only so many hours in the day. There's only so much you can do. But you also know these are unique moments.
Yeah, and that's the thing you got to focus on, because it is, you know, when these things start happening, you can focus and say, man, it's extra work. We've got SEC Nation here this week, game day. We've got CBS Pro, all these things, and it adds to the workload. But we got to remember, again, we have six opportunities to put on a show, whether it's recruiting, whether it's our fans, whether it's a young child that's 7 years old making their first appearance in Sanford Stadium. It's important to make those memories, because those are the indirect benefits that we're going to have down the road. And again, when we talk about recruits, we got track recruits here this weekend or other sports here making the most of it, because those benefits will lead to success in other sports, lead to success in football, and so on and so on. So really it's about capitalizing and making the most of it, enjoying these six opportunities we have at home.
It's so great to see you. Josh Brooks, the athletic director at the University of Georgia. He's been here a while, but he is now in charge, and what a good time it is to be in charge. Thanks, here. Thanks so much.
Go Dogs.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we are live in Athens. We have had a phenomenal show. Kirby Smart dropped by a little while ago. We just had the AD, Josh Brooks. We've had Coach Donnan, so many other, Tebow. It's been quite an afternoon here, and we really appreciate all of you for coming out. Let's grab some more calls here. Ronald is up next. Hey, Ronald.
Hey, Mr. Feinbaum. It's always an honor to be on your show. I should say Feinbaum. Pronunciation dedicated to the late, great Tammy.
Oh, well, thank you.
All right. Look, I got a question for you, Paul. It's caused a lot of controversy amongst our friends. We've been talking. Which team do you think in the SEC would benefit the most if Saban retires?
That is a great question. Before I answer, let me ask you what you've heard from your group.
Well, most people think it would be Texas A&M and Georgia. But I don't know, man. I think that several teams would benefit from it, because it would be a wide open space, because Kirby's kind of dominating recruiting in his category. But I think that it would be a wide open show.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think what comes to mind immediately is Georgia. And I say that knowing that Georgia has really recruited at the same level as Alabama. But I think it would help them even more. I tell you another school that's pretty obvious, and we don't think about them maybe in the same light, but I think Auburn benefits too, because it's in state, and right now Auburn clearly is not recruiting anywhere near to the degree that Alabama is, so it would help them a little bit. But I think the biggest winner would be Georgia.
Well, yeah, the reason Texas A&M came in is because they beat Alabama this year, and Jimbo Fisher is also an excellent recruiter.
He is. I just Now, listen, when you talk about the top players in the country, it's not a regional thing anymore. It's a national thing. But
yes, sir.
I would say Alabama and Georgia are probably in on more players together than maybe it would come down to Alabama and Georgia than Alabama and Texas A&M. Another school that would benefit greatly is LSU because Nick Saban has gotten so many five-star players out of Louisiana.
Well, that's true, but LSU is going to be changing coaches, I'm afraid, in the next year or so.
Well, yeah, maybe in the next week or two, but you're right. I mean, I'm just giving you I'm just giving you snapshot judgments, but, I mean, there are a lot of – I think everyone would be pretty happy to see him go. Let me put it that way.
I hear you, Paul. Look, this has been a fantastic show. I've enjoyed every minute of it, man. It's an honor to be on your show, sir.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you. Appreciate that. Let's continue with more phone calls here, and Tanner is in Virginia. Hello, Tanner. Go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. It's Tanner here. You probably talked to my dad, Jeremy, a couple times on the phone. I just want to say something about the game tomorrow. After the game, y'all going to have to put some respect behind Kentucky's name.
Well, I hear you. Well, Tanner, how old are you?
I'm 12 years old, Paul.
Well, you are at a great age, and I hope you enjoy the game tomorrow, and you call again, Tanner. Take care of yourself. Bill is up next in Tennessee. Hey, Bill, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. Paul, you were talking about Stetson Bennett. His grandfather was a guy named Buddy Bennett. Buddy coached at East Tennessee State and then was on Bill Battle's first staff at Tennessee as a secondary coach and then went and coached.
Was he really?
Frank Boyle. Yeah, and Buddy was on the team that set the that record. I played on that team, and we set the NCAA record for takeaways. It still stands. We had 65 takeaways if you count the bowl game in 12 games.
So Bill, would this be the 70 team?
The 70 team. It was the 70 team. It was Coach Battle's first year, and you had Priest and Majors and David Allen and Conrad Graham were the secondary, and they had like 30 interceptions, and we had 65 we had eight takeaways in the Sugar Bowl. And it's interesting, but that's his grandpa. He's deceased. He died a few years ago, but that's Stetson's grandfather. It was Buddy
Bennett. Well, I'm glad you told me. No, I mean, that team, didn't that team beat Alabama?
We shut them out. It was 24 to nothing, and we had eight interceptions in that game. The funny story was that they told Scott Hunter just to throw it to Priest, and maybe one of their guys could intercept it because Priest had, I don't know how many interceptions he had.
That is really funny. That's amazing.
But Buddy coached 1 year and then went on to Arkansas, and then we played Arkansas the next year in the bowl game and beat them 14-13.
Now, that game was at the Liberty Bowl. I was at that game.
It was. That was in the Liberty Bowl, and that was a heck of a game. And
I remember that being maybe that was like a you probably didn't bother you because you were a football player, but as a kid, I was, as a teenager, I don't think I've ever been that cold in my life.
The 74 game was the one that was so cold against Maryland.
Okay, maybe you're right. I was at that game too,
That was the one Coach Battle's father died at.
That was against Maryland. I do remember that. Okay, I used to go to the Liberty Bowl every year, so I got my Tennessee games and the Liberty Bowl confused. But I'm glad you did. Another Liberty Bowl I got was when Alabama was in it in '82. I appreciate you telling me that. That's a fantastic nugget, which I was unaware of.
Well, that's great. Paul, when we get off air, if you could have somebody contact me, I'd like to sit down and visit with you about a project I'm working on. For a bunch of us old players that need something, I don't know how to get in touch with you.
I tell you what, let me do this, Ronald. I will put you on hold, and they can give you a way to contact me, and we will definitely have a conversation. I look forward to that. Thanks. Brenton in Georgia is up next. Hey, Brenton.
Hey, Paul. Roll Tide. But I just want to talk a little bit about Georgia here. You know, Kirby's done a fantastic job recruiting. They've been so close to winning. How much pressure is on Georgia now? They're number one. Everybody's talking about them. if they don't win the championship this year, I believe there's going to be a meltdown in Athens. How do you feel about that?
Listen, when you're the number one team in the country, it carries with it a lot of pressure. We, you know, beating the number two team is great, but there's, I mean, and you'll still see it in a late, I mean, Kentucky would be more than happy to have beaten the number two team tomorrow, but there is something magical about number one. I don't care what any coach says. And I think, you know, Kirby, I joked with him about it. He always says the same thing because that's how you have to be. And I think it's worked to his advantage, but I would agree. This is the first time, I mean, in 17, the expectations were different. Remember that team lost to Auburn? They, you know, it was a completely different situation back then. And even in the Alabama game, Alabama was favored. This is a different situation, and Georgia will be favored against everyone, probably including Alabama, if they face each other. And when you get people saying, like they have all week, Georgia is now the favorite to win, Georgia is going to win, they have the best team, it adds to what happens when you fall. I've seen Alabama teams that were supposed to win not win, and we experienced it this week on this program, and it does come with a big price.
Do you think their defense, you know, so far at this point, that they've not really faced any, like, anybody that throws the ball as well as, you know, down the field? Do you think that's going to hurt them maybe? Like, because their schedule really doesn't show any quarterbacks that really probably will scare them throwing the football.
No,
but
I'm not looking past tomorrow, but I am really interested in 2 weeks from now against Florida. And, you know, we can either give Dan Mullen all the praise or not, but he is a dynamic play caller, he had a great strategy 2 years ago against Joe Burrow, not against Joe Burrow, but against that Alabama LSU defense. And I would be a little concerned about that game, and I know the rivalry comes into it, but that's other than that, no. I mean, at least until Alabama, the Dogs are not going to see anybody that should put the fear into them. Hey, thank you for the call. Do appreciate it. We're heading to a break. We have Chris Doering next. We'll get his take on the weekend and more of your phone calls after that.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Columbia Vandy taking on South Carolina in primetime. Lane Kiffin returns to Knoxville, 7:30 Eastern. And Chris Doering will be in studio talking about all of those games when they're over, and he joins us now. Chris, thanks for the time. It's always good to see you on these Friday afternoons. Let's start where we are right now. As you well know, these Dog fans are sky-high, number one in the country. What are they going to face tomorrow when the Cats come to town?
Well, they should be sky high. I've been saying all along, I think this is the most complete team in college football. They continue to get better. And by the way, they've been doing it with a backup quarterback who is probably better than half the country's starting quarterback. So they have the luxury of having a lot of depth. Obviously, they've recruited really, really well. But with Kentucky, it's kind of the opposite, right? They're built very differently. They don't have the 4 and 5 stars like Georgia has, but they have guys that play really hard. They understand their jobs, they execute really well, and they're developed. I think that's one of the things that Coach Stoops' staff has done better than anybody is develop the talent that they've brought in there. So they are starting to get a little bit more talent. They're being able to recruit in some places they hadn't been able to recruit before. But I think at the end of the day, you're talking about a team that's a bad matchup for Kentucky to have to play. It reminds me a lot of the Arkansas game a couple weeks ago. Kentucky runs the football really well. Georgia will not give up a lot of runs. Kentucky doesn't have a ton of explosiveness. It certainly hurts to have Josh Ali out of the lineup. So Wandale Robinson, I imagine, will get a lot of the attention from the Georgia secondary. And I just don't see them being able to move the ball consistently without having some explosive plays. And I don't know if this Kentucky team has the explosiveness you need to knock off the Georgia Bulldogs.
jump ahead a little bit, because I'm the question 2 weeks from now, maybe somewhere, but what type of team would cause the most problems for Georgia?
You know, ironically, I think it might be Tennessee. I mean, we look at what Tennessee has done, their evolving offense that has now found a leader in Hendon Hooker. What they do offensively gives some teams like Georgia, potentially like Alabama, a hard time with all of the tempo that they use, with the motions, the misdirections, the eye candy that goes along with it. You know, I really think that Tennessee offense is continuing to get better and better and could be a potential challenge for one of the better defenses in the conference like Georgia.
A lot of big games on the docket tomorrow. I want to talk about the one in Starkville. Everyone assumes Alabama bounces back. That's just what you expect from Nick Saban after a loss. Not that we've had a lot of experience with watching Nick Saban teams after a loss. So what do you expect tomorrow night?
Yeah, speaking of things we expect, I mean, this season has taught us we got to expect the unexpected, right? Every single week we think we figure something out. We come out and see something to the contrary the following week. So in typical fashion, Alabama would fix the things that ail them. I don't necessarily know that they have yet, but I also know that what Mississippi State does offensively are not the things that have created some strain on this Alabama defense early in the season, like Florida did against them, like A&M did last week. So I think that in this instance, it's going to be a little bit of a grinded-out game. I do believe that Mississippi State's starting to find their way on the offensive end, but I just don't see them being able to consistently score down in the red zone. Without the ability to run the football, without the ability to line up and move people off the line of scrimmage, I just don't know that Mississippi State can consistently score without having some of the longer plays from outside of the red zone. I do think Alabama wins this game, but I think it's a closer game than a lot of people probably expect.
Talking to Chris Doering about the slate tomorrow, I think you know where I'm going next, Knoxville. You mentioned them a minute ago, and Lane Kiffin shows up on his white horse, and, you know, Ole Miss, for all the explosiveness, you've already alluded to Tennessee. How was this game won?
Yeah, the ironic part about it is I think there actually might be something about the defenses being ready for these offenses because they're very similarly built, right? Remember that Jeff Levy was with Josh Heupel down at UCF. A lot of what has been incorporated into the Ole Miss offense are things that Tennessee does very similarly. So these offenses in practice every day are going up against the defenses, using tempo, using that misdirection we talked about, using the motions. So I actually think that these defenses may be more primed for what they're going to see and have to defend tomorrow than maybe like any of the other teams that don't get the luxury of going up against them. Now, with that being said, I believe in Ole Miss. I came on your show a couple weeks ago. I was wrong about the prediction of who was going to knock off Alabama. But I do believe in Ole Miss. I think they got something to prove on the defensive side. They were embarrassed last week by Arkansas. But Matt Corral, to me, continues to be the best player in college football. What he does, in addition to throwing the ball with the run game, what they ask him to do between the tackles, the guy is incredibly tough, and he puts a lot of pressure on the opposing defenses. So I'm going to stick with my Ole Miss Rebel team here, but I do think it's an entertaining ball game.
Chris, finally in Baton Rouge, we all know how depleted this LSU team is. It's almost inconceivable to think of all the players that they have lost and the contribution that they could be making. So what gives in the early game at Tiger Stadium?
It seems a little similar to last year, right, when everybody had kind of left LSU in the garbage heap on the side of the road. Florida was a 3-touchdown favorite, and here comes LSU and is able to pull off a victory, rally that locker room together, and create a little momentum at the end of the season. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen this year, but it's not like everybody's feeling all, you know, rainbows and unicorns about Florida. They had that disappointing loss with the 15 penalties against Kentucky a couple weeks ago. They did have a remedy for correcting what ailed them, and that was playing Vanderbilt last week. But it wasn't exactly like they were smooth on offense. So I do think this is a game where we're thinking that Florida's probably going to win, more so because we feel less confident about where LSU is. But I do think that Dan Mullen is one of the best schemers and play callers in college football. And from what I've seen on tape, Paul, the LSU defense is absolutely terrible in terms of executing their assignments, knowing what they're supposed to do, and even maybe more troubling to me is how slow and indecisive they play. And a lot of that comes from maybe not knowing what you're supposed to be doing, but they're in a lot of different conflicts of assignment, and it just doesn't look like an LSU defense that we're typically used to seeing.
Chris Doering with a look ahead to tomorrow. Thank you very much, Chris. We appreciate it. Always enjoy the Friday afternoon conversations, more of your phone calls as we begin to wrap up what has been a very busy afternoon here at the University of Georgia. We had Kirby Smart on, Tebow, Coach Donnan joined us earlier, Josh Brooks, the AD here. It's really been quite an afternoon, homecoming weekend.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.